On the one hand, it is a startling escalation. Though Israel has, in recent years, struck hundreds of targets in Syria related to Iran and its regional proxies, bombing the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus and killing several pretty clearly targeted individuals is quite an upping of the ante. On the other hand, it is just another example of a well-established pattern of Israel's tactics where its great nemesis, Iran, is concerned. In the last decade and a bit, several scientists associated with Iran's nuclear program have met violent ends. Most recently, at least that we know of, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the head of Iran's nuclear program, shot dead in 2020, apparently by a remote-controlled machine gun, which was used to ambush his convoy.
Fakhrizadeh has long been regarded by Israel and Western intelligence agencies as the mastermind behind the country's covert nuclear weapons program.
Iran has confirmed that among at least 11 people killed in Monday's destruction of the annex alongside the Damascus embassy proper were Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, Brigadier General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, and Brigadier General Hossein Amanullahi, all senior officers in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or IRGC.
Iran's foreign minister called the attack a violation of all international obligations and conventions. He went on to emphasize the need for a serious response by the international community to what he said were criminal actions.
Again, this is not an altogether unfamiliar scenario. In December, another IRGC Brigadier General, Razi Mousavi, was killed in an Israeli airstrike near Damascus. At least five other IRGC officers have died in similar circumstances since. And Israel is not alone among Iran's adversaries in wishing to make it clear that obliteration from the air is an occupational hazard of lofty rank in the IRGC. In January 2020, Major General Qasem Soleimani of the IRGC, widely reckoned to be among Iran's most powerful people, was killed by an American drone strike near the international airport in Baghdad.
Soleimani was plotting imminent and sinister attacks on American diplomats and military personnel, but we caught him in the act and terminated him.
The presence of such prominent IRGC figures in Iraq and Syria and elsewhere in the region says much about the strange, ambiguous role the IRGC fulfills. The IRGC is not Iran's military, though it is a military organization and a formidable one, with perhaps 200,000 troops and its own army, navy, and air force, and operational control of Iran's ballistic missiles. The IRGC is not a police force, though its associated volunteer militia, the Basij Resistance Force, is often deployed against the domestic enemies, real and imagined, of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The IRGC is not Iran's intelligence service, though it certainly conducts intelligence operations. And the IRGC is not a political movement, though it has close ideological ties to Iran's clerical establishment, especially to the IRGC's ultimate commander, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
They want the Iranian nation to adopt the same beliefs as American and British leaders, and so on. This is their goal and their plan. Of course, the Iranian nation slapped them in the mouth and will keep slapping them in the mouth in the future.
If all of the above conjures an image of an organization which is all at once the US Marine Corps, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Mossad, though the IRGC probably wouldn't appreciate that comparison, and Mao Zedong's Red Guards, that's not inaccurate, but still not the whole story. The IRGC also controls considerable commercial interests, including construction, shipping, banking, telecoms, energy, and laser eye surgery. Then there is the Quds Force, which Qasem Soleimani commanded and in which the three late brigadiers all served. The Quds Force is the Foreign Operations Directorate of the IRGC, responsible for projecting, usually semi-covertly, Iran's interests abroad. The Quds Force has been active in Syria throughout the decade plus of Syria's civil war, often in cahoots with the broadly sympathetic Lebanese Shia militia Hezbollah. The Quds Force has also operated in Yemen, Afghanistan, and Iraq, where the United States says hundreds of American troops were killed by Quds Force activities or influence. And according to senior Hamas and Hezbollah members cited in plausible reports, the IRGC was involved in the planning of Hamas's attack on Israel last October 7th. Iran, at the very least, supported the massacre afterwards. Plus, it had been reported in the months beforehand that the current commander of the Quds Force, Brigadier General Esmail Khani, had been holding meetings at Iran's embassy in Beirut with senior leaders of Hezbollah, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad in an apparent effort to establish some sort of unified command structure for Iran's allies and or proxies on the other side of Israel's borders.
سبکی رو که جنایتکاران دارند رو نداریم اما سبک متعلق به خودمون رو داریم.
We will not use criminal means, but Iran has its own style. The glorious path of resistance continues, and the sword of resistance will remove all obstacles in Iran's development.
For all the ferocity with which Israel has pursued Hamas in Gaza these last 6 months, Iran remains Israel's overarching concern. Before October 7th, Israel had come to see its issues with its Palestinian neighbours as largely ignorable and its relations with other Arab countries as probably fixable. The great diplomatic prize of normalisation with Saudi Arabia was being discussed as a when, not an if, and does still seem more or less inevitable once the dust settles over whatever remains of Gaza. But not even the most ecstatically optimistic Israeli foreign policy thinker imagines an Israeli prime minister and an Iranian president posing for happy snaps with their shared Nobel Peace Prize. Since the strike on its Damascus embassy, Iran has issued the standard blood-curdling threats of vengeance.
Iran's supreme leader has released a statement expressing his condolences. He also says, quote, the vicious Zionist regime will be punished at the hands of Iran's brave men, and it will be made to regret for committing these crimes.
While the Iranian regime said much the same after Soleimani was killed, their eventual actual response seemed somewhat muted. They may feel obliged to make some sort of demonstration this time, if only to maintain credibility among those organisations which are effectively fighting Iran's war with Israel on Iran's behalf. Israel, meanwhile, will be congratulating itself on the precision of its operation. Quietly, of course, as Israel is officially maintaining its usual stance of refusing to confirm or deny involvement while undertaking its standard program of nudging and winking so that nobody is in any doubt. It is indeed quite something to launch from an F-35 munitions that demolish one building without breaking a window next door. But you cannot plausibly boast of the accuracy of your weapons or the humanitarian imperative underpinning the punctiliousness of your targeting the same week you've put missiles through the roofs of three cars full of aid workers. For Monocle Radio, I'm Andrew Muller.